San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB or tune in radio, you can hear this show on any device as it airs. And, of course, all the podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. Now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, an accomplished marathon runner, a best-selling author, a lecturer, a philanthropist, and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Good evening, Richard. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
All right. That's fantastic. Did you have a good Happy New Year and all?
It sure was fun. We were up in the snow in Durango.
Good, good, good. And a good friend of our show, as you know, Dick Enberg, passed away right before the holidays. So our condolences to his family and all his fans. A ton of them out there. But on the line, I don't want to waste too much time. We have a VIP. He's the chief medical correspondent for CNN. You all know him and love him. It's Sanjay Gupta, ND. Sanjay, welcome to our show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. The reason why we're having you on, there's been so much controversy about cannabis, and I reviewed over the holidays, your great documentaries called Weed, and I think you did about three of those, correct?
That's right. That's right. We're working on number four.
Yeah. Oh, good. Because I did what prompted me getting a hold of you is I wanted CNN to maybe rebroadcast those. But obviously, if you're doing a fourth one, even better. So maybe you could give us some of the main talking points or findings that you had in Weed itself. And then I wanted to see if there was anything new that you had discovered since. So why don't you just take that?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, this was a real journey when we started diving into this reporting around medicinal marijuana. And I'll preface by saying, and I think you and I may have even talked about it in the past, but I wasn't particularly excited or thinking there was going to be a lot of substance to medicinal marijuana in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I had, in fact, written about that for Time Magazine, and I just didn't think that the data was compelling, and I thought that the people were mainly using this as a foothold for other things, other agendas that they were trying to advance.
Right.
But over, you know, an 18-month period of researching and writing and traveling around the world and talking to people, we found that there were not only seemingly good medicinal applications, uses for marijuana, but there were situations, Joe, where it worked and nothing else did work.
Right.
So it became not only a medical issue in some ways, but it became a moral issue. And that was really the focus of Weed One, which is, you know, the idea that it could help somebody, in this case, a child and
right.
multiple children who had seizures that could not be treated.
Right. So epilepsy, obviously, it's helping that. I myself have eczema, and I got a medical card a few weeks ago. I'm not an intoxication fan, but I know they have these tinctures, and I've been using that, and some edibles, and some balms, and I'll tell you, it's improved. You're a neurosurgeon. It's improved like my sense of touch, if that makes sense. I've noticed my sense of touch has increased. Isn't that weird? I don't know. There's something it does to our neurological system, apparently, right?
Well, the thing about it is, and it's very interesting because we have a what's called an endocannabinoid system in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big word, but basically what it means is we have receptors for cannabis.
Mm.
They exist, and our bodies make a natural form of this as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring that up only to say that the idea of sort of binding to these receptors in our body with this natural plant, in some ways, evolutionarily, it makes a lot of sense. These
mm.
receptors exist in our brain. They exist in our gut.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people tell me that they've had terrible problems with inflammatory bowel disease or even things like ulcerative colitis that they've had improvement with this. These things need to be tested, but from a science and mechanism standpoint, you can start to understand why cannabis could work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just conjecture. You could understand the actual mechanism by which this can work.
Right.
But why is there still a moral underpinning to this that some people find objectionable? I don't understand
it. It's probably ignorance. What do you think, doctor?
Well, I mean, and it's a strong one. It's a strong there's a strong moral objection by groups of people, and I think part of it is the history of marijuana. You know, this is a substance that you know, you had this documentary done back in 1936 that was basically sort of likening the use of marijuana to or you know, unable to get a job, more likely to participate in crime, all these sorts of things. Reefer madness, and you know, I think for 70 years or so now, 80 years, there's been a sort of hangover feel from that, and I think people also don't they don't disconnect this idea of recreational use and medicinal use.
Right.
I mean, you know, if there's a medication that can help somebody, can help prevent seizures, can help treat PTSD, can help relieve neuropathic pain, the first question that people ask typically isn't, will this be abused, right? You don't, if something's for cardiac disease, like a statin drug, you don't say, well, we're not sure that this might be, get abused.
Yeah.
That's the first question. With cannabis, it is because of this intoxicating effect, this euphoric effect that you mentioned. It's been really hard to dissociate these things, and as a result, I think people don't give it the medicinal sort of respect that it deserves.
Now, CBD, and there's a bunch of other endocannabinoids in existence that we don't even know. I think it's like 113. We haven't barely scratched the surface about with these, and these are the non-psychoactive agents, right?
Yeah, that's right. So THC is the one that people think of as psychoactive, causing somebody to get high.
Mm-hmm.
CBD is one of the other, you know, there's many of these different things that also stimulates these receptors in the body.
Mm-hmm.
The other ingredients within cannabis, while we haven't identified many of these, as you point out, or figured out exactly what they do, there's increasing evidence that they do something, and it could just be that they help the CBD travel through the body.
Yeah.
It could be that they just help open up receptors so CBD can work better in the body. We don't know, but it's an important point because there's a lot of people who say, well, I'll just distill down CBD only, and CBD only legislation in the country has become a bigger thing as well. That may be a little bit misguided. If you don't have the whole plant, you may be missing out on what is known as the entourage effect,
right?
Which is basically saying these other chemicals, these other components of the plant have some role in making this medicine work as well as it can.
It's always better to eat the whole orange rather than just the juice, I would say.
That's right. That's right.
Now, about addiction rates, you found some curious information comparing opioids to meth to cannabis and alcohol, and it appears cannabis is the least addictive of all of those, huh?
It does. I mean, you know, people define addiction in different ways. You know, I think that when, you know, as doctors, one of the things that we specifically look for with regard to physical addiction is, does the person, when they stop taking the substance, have a measurable physical change in their body? Does their heart rate go up? Does their blood pressure change? Do they start to sweat? Does their breathing patterns change? All these things. That's a physical sort of physical evidence of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's more, you know, what you could call psychological addiction, where you just really want this and the need is very compelling, but you're not going to be sick or get physically unwell if you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So these are different things. But look, when it comes to rates of addiction, nicotine is far and away the highest.
Absolutely.
You know, smoking, cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you know, when you start looking at things like opium, you know, all the poppy-based plants, including heroin and obviously all the narcotic prescription pills, those are very addictive as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we it's not to say that there isn't a always a concern about addiction, but in the context of things, marijuana is a lot lower than these things.
Mm.
And also, in our reporting, in our searching, we never found evidence of an overdose death from marijuana alone.
Mm.
You have people dying of overdose of drugs in this country every 19 minutes.
Yeah.
Marijuana, well, even alcohol poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
alcohol poisoning and heroin and prescription drugs, you know, so those are the big ones. Again, I'm talking about it as a medicine, but when you're taking this, there's not evidence that this actually causes the body to stop, you know, stop breathing, which is typically what happens with these opioid overdose deaths. Yeah. The signal to breathe, the drive to breathe, is inhibited by some of those drugs.
Gotcha.
And that's what causes someone to die.
Yeah. Now, as far as violence goes and the connection between those drugs, there was a statement made that they think cannabis leads to violent behavior. I think it's a lot worse with alcohol and other agents.
Yeah, just go to a Raiders football game.
Yeah. but don't you agree?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as violent behavior and the connection, or is there any data to prove that now, which brings on the most violent behavior, which drugs?
I saw an interesting study. It wasn't directly related to this, but it actually had more to do with driving. And just to be clear, no one is suggesting that anyone drive under the influence of alcohol or cannabis. But in those studies that were done, they found that people who were driving under the influence of alcohol were much more likely to be aggressive drivers, fast lane changes, speeding, and much more devastating crashes, and very different than those who are under the influence of cannabis. To the extent that that's a metaphor for violence, perhaps. Mm-hmm. This is that particular area is a subject of constant study.
Gotcha. Anyway, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, we have to wrap it right there. Thanks so much for being our guest. We're going to get to Joe Marino when we come back after this break. Please stay tuned.